This is a podcast from Minute Media.
This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Verderam and Mark Carman. Well. Welcome in to Stacking the Box and proud new third time parent, my guy, Matt Verderam. Verderam, I don't want to get emotional on the show here at the start here, I missed you, buddy. I actually.
That's fine. There's no reason to get emotional. I missed you too, Carm. I'm glad to be back. I'm excited to be back. I've missed doing the show the last couple of weeks. We have a good amount to get to. This is always kind of a little bit of a dead period between the draft and free agency. But now we're 9 days away from the draft. So it is time to get the party started.
Well, before we do that, and Jay Ward giving you GOAT mentions here is just a big time thing. Jerry, I talked to an actual GOAT yesterday in Jerry Rice. We might play a clip of that on your Verderam on the fly. I do want to know what grade you're giving yourself in the early going here of this further parenting challenge that you've taken on. How would you say you've done here now 2+ weeks in? Be honest, please.
I give myself an A. I mean, I stay up every night. We do it in shifts, right? We parent shifts. So obviously during the day we're just both there. But then Steph likes to go to bed early, and I never do anyway. So I take Genevieve from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. And I just put her – you can actually almost see it over my shoulder – oh, wrong shoulder – over this shoulder over here. If you're watching on YouTube, there's a rock and play in the back corner.
Schefter texting you?
No. Actually, my agent was texting me. But in any event – point being, she's there for 6 hours, and it's good. She sleeps great. I feed her a couple times, change her a couple times. We're in good shape. It's going well. I have no complaints.
And I'll move on here. I know everybody wants to hear football, but I do want to know, like, on the changing technique, how much better are you now? How quickly can you get it done? How efficient are you? Have you been peed on?
Oh, yeah, I've been peed on. Yeah, but I think that kind of just comes with the territory. It's been good. I mean, listen, it's been good. I can't complain. I think it's a lot easier the second time around because you're just not as intimidated by it. Like, okay, I need to change diapers. I need to feed her every X amount of hours. But you've done it. Like, you know, like, even when you hit a moment, like, oh my God, she just peed all over the couch, which happened like 4 days ago. And, you know, there's a million things going on. You're like, okay, you know what? I can do this. Like, I've done it a million times over. So it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah. I watched your space the other day and Gonzo's commenting on it. And you were talking about Ben on there, we don't need to go deep into all of it, but it was extremely emotional and just, it was really just great to listen to you, Verdi. I mean, you opened up, I think, a beautiful place for a lot of anybody who was checking in. And of course, Ben was how long ago now? 1 year, right? It was a 1 year anniversary.
One year and 5 days from today, now.
Yeah.
You know, I did it, and you're right. Look, we can get into football, but I did it because I think anybody who's ever dealt with a loss, you can deal with it in a lot of different ways. And I'm not saying there's a right way and there's a wrong way, right? I mean, well, some ways are obviously wrong. But if you want to be quiet about your loss, that's totally fine. That's up to you. If you want to talk about it, that's fine. I always just feel like, look, it happened. And I was public about losing Ben when we lost him because I was public that Steph was pregnant with him. So I kind of felt like I had to be. I don't know. Maybe it helps one or two people. I mean, and if it does, then that's worth it. I don't mind talking about it. Obviously, I don't love talking about it. It's a sad thing. But I don't mind talking about – look, we talk about all the great things that happen to us in our lives. Sometimes you have to talk about tough moments. At least I do. Now, again, if somebody out there says, hey, man, that's not me, that's cool. I totally understand that. I get that. And you have to handle it in your way. But for me, that's just the way I chose to handle it.
Yeah, and just the old Carm piece of 2 cents here. You're doing it for you, man. People like it, great. If they don't, great. If you help someone, great. I'm sure you have. But that's not the point. It's for you, dude. And getting yourself expressed like that, wherever it is, home, Twitter space, Stag in the Box, I think it's great. So, and you're not looking for my congrats, but I've seen you do a lot of spaces. And sometimes I click on, sometimes I don't. This one's like, oh my, I'm absolutely going to listen to what Matt has to say about it. And I thought it was great. So, not that that matters either, but I was just sitting there just like, Verteram is my dude. And so I just really appreciated you in the moment. But all right, let's talk draft here. You put on the rundown, Verty. What's the biggest story entering the NFL draft? Listen, I'll let you answer your own question here before I jump in here. Let me stop then. Go ahead. What do you think is the biggest story entering the draft right now?
I think it's got to be which teams end up scrambling for a quarterback. And look, there's obvious teams, right? Like, there's obviously teams that are candidates for that. Basically, the entire NFC South outside of Tampa. Pittsburgh is in that mix. I don't know that I'd put Detroit in that mix. Like, could Detroit take a quarterback with 32? Yeah, but I don't know they'd scramble to take a quarterback, right? So I think it's a little bit different. Seattle, of course, is on our team. None of these quarterbacks should be top 10 picks. None of them. And this comes from somebody who I really like, Malik Willis. I really do. But he shouldn't be a top 10 pick.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay. All right. Well, no, that's fine. And that's fine, right? But that's what makes it such an interesting storyline to follow. Like, there is such a high variance of opinion on these guys. I see Malik Willis as a top 20-level pick. I don't see any of these other guys as a first-round pick. I like Matt Corral. Like, I could see it. Like, if the Lions took him at 32, I could see it. Ritter, to me, is not a first-round pick. Pickett's going to be a first-round pick. I do not get it. I don't. Maybe. And you know what? I always say this. I root for players. I honestly hope that I am dead wrong. But I do not see it. I don't. Gonzo asks if the Commanders have a first-round pick. They do, and that's a good call by Gonzo. They could also take a quarterback.
11.
Yeah. I just don't see, like, to me, but you know there are going to be teams that panic and do it. You know it's going to happen. The Panthers, to me, are suspect number 1, 2, 3, and 4 because Tepper is a very hands-on owner, gave a ton of money to Matt Rhule. That thing has not gotten off the ground in 2 years. Now we go into year 3. They have Sam Darnold. They know they can't win with Sam Darnold. If they don't win this year, Rhule's probably out the door, and Rhule knows it. So do you see a panic move there? That, to me, is the interesting storyline. And if a quarterback goes early, is there like a mini run on guys? All of a sudden, does Pittsburgh try to trade up? Does Seattle take a guy because they get spooked a little bit? Like, I'm very interested to see how it shakes.
Well, it's the run on quarterbacks and the run on receivers that's super interesting to me. But, like, look, who do you think – you think, clearly, Malik Willis has the highest upside, right?
I do, yes.
So if he hits, if you're wrong, how good is he? With his skill set.
I think he's going to be a good player. I just think he's really raw, and I think there's a lot. Now, the upside, I think, is tremendous. I think upside-wise, like, if he hits his ceiling, he could be an elite-level quarterback.
Which is – that's my point. Listen, you have to draft, and when you're drafting a quarterback, I think what makes the most sense is you're looking for elite. You are taking a shot at the top of the food chain, and Malik Willis
True.
He's the guy that could do it. So is he worth, if you're sitting there at number 6 and you're the Carolina Panthers, to me that's a no-brainer. If you're sitting there at 8 and you're the Atlanta Falcons and he's there, you take him and you trust in your ability to develop the QB and you're looking to hit the home run because that's a total game changer for your franchise. If you had a home run. And the way things are going this offseason, it's like if you had a home run on a wide receiver, I guess that's like second most huge nowadays, even bigger than an edge rusher, which I know that we're going to have a nice conversation about Kayvon Thibodeau in a second here. But like, it's just the offseason has been incredibly bizarre what's gone on. with wide receivers getting traded, and all starting, by the way, when the Miami, you know, why am I drawing a blank right now? When we saw receivers getting incredibly overpaid, and all of a sudden Christian Kirk is getting $38 million guaranteed, and then everybody freaks out because the Jaguars go nuts, change the whole market. So now it's like, and this is supposed to be a huge wide receiver draft. So do people jump up and draft wide receivers a ton? I would assume they will, but my thing is, who's going to take Malik Willis? Who's going to take a shot at this? And to me, that's the potential home run sitting out there for someone who's willing to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And by the way, I'm not meaning to be rude. I know I'm like looking down at my phone. Like, the reason was, by the way, shout out to my agent, Debbie Spander. This is why you get an agent. So she texted me during this podcast. She's like, I think your Twitter just got hacked. Like, really? Like, I have two-factor authentication, right? She's like, yeah, you just got logged in from Moscow. Like, that's not good, right? But I was still logged into my account. So, like, on the fly here, I just changed all my passwords. Good looking out by Debbie. Save me from getting hacked from
How the hell did Debbie know that you got hacked by Moscow?
Because her email account is in my bio, so it automatically sends her a warning, essentially. So that was huge.
Verderam Moscow?
Apparently, yeah. Kremlin Verder. Who would have thought, right? But so she saved me from a real, real, real headache.
Putin's coming after you, buddy.
Well, who isn't these days? All right. So look, the quarterbacks are fascinating to me. And then I did a Spaces right before we came on here on Twitter that I just wanted to touch on this real quick. So I think half the picks in the first round are going to be receivers and edge rushers. And what's going to be interesting is, and you brought this up, the receivers. The salaries have gone so nuts with receivers now. If you're taking a guy in the first round, you're factoring in that fifth-year option, right? Like, more so than you would on other players. Not to say that you wouldn't factor it in a defensive tackle, but having that fifth-year control now really seems to matter, because I wonder how many receivers are getting second and third contracts with their current teams. I mean, if the going rate for a receiver is going to be $25 to $30 million a year for any guy who has 1,000+ yards, I mean, you're not paying that guy. Look, everybody knows how I feel about the Tyreek Hill trade on here. I have been very, very upfront, and we've talked a lot about that, right? I think the Chiefs got worse in the immediate by losing him. I also do not blame them at all for not paying him $70 million guaranteed. Like, that is and I don't blame the Packers with Adams either. And I don't like that either one of those teams lost those guys. I would have understood if they had paid him. But you're starting to get to a point where, like, that's quarterback money for some of these guys. No receiver, I don't care who he is, nobody in this league is worth what a quarterback's worth. None of them. A quarterback, look, if you put Tyreek Hill on a really bad team, they're winning 4 games. Okay, I don't care what he does. If I put Patrick Mahomes on a bad team, that team's making the playoffs. Like, borderline playoffs at worst. Look at Peyton Manning all those years with the Colts. That team, the second he wasn't there, won 2 games. Every year he was there, they won 11. Okay, so it's going to be interesting. If you're a team taking a receiver, how much of that do you factor in?
So, I agree with you, and I've always thought, of course, it's the quarterback, which is why when Devontae leaves to the Raiders, I'm like, I don't think the Packers are going to fall apart. But then, I mean, you've said it, and not everybody says, well, who the hell is he going to throw the ball to?
Right.
And so you have to look at what's going on in the league. These people get paid to do this. And this is what they're doing. Now, everyone is saying that the receiver market is completely gone off the rails and people are getting overpaid. But then you have Debo and DK Metcalf and AJ Brown and Terry McLaurin all sitting out there like, well, you're going to be kicking down for me. And most guesses right now are that everyone's going to pay. then maybe the Seahawks will trade DK because they traded Russell and they're just going to do a full rebuild. But other than that, people expect the 49ers to pay for Debo. Like, okay, this is the going rate. The salary cap's exploded.
Would you pay him? Like, let's say he wants $30 million a year. Let's say he wants 4 years, 120, 90. Let's not say 90. Let's say 4 years, 120, 80 million guaranteed. Would you give it to him?
The argument in giving it to him is the minute he walks out the door, you are worse. Right. That is the reality.
Right. Worse.
And it's just what you said about Tyreek. So am I going to trust that my GM, me, is going to draft that well? When you look at the history of the draft, these are the top people evaluating football. They're supposed to be, you know, football savants. You look at you look at the drafts the last 5 years, 31%, one out of three, end up getting a second contract who are drafted in the first round. They miss two out of three times. So, yep. You know, you've got an elite player who makes your, and this is the going rate. Am I going to be like, the going rate's crazy. I'm not paying it, and I'm going to bet on myself in the draft. That's a tough position, man.
I agree. But, and by the way, look, Ed asks, is there a bubble for receiver salaries? Yeah. I mean, I think at some point here that bubble is going to – there's no way to me – like, the cap's going to keep going up, so salaries will continue to go up. But it's just – look, at some point here, if it's not the rare air guy, you're not even going to consider paying somebody that. And I would make the argument, if a team called the Niners up and offered the same package for Hill that they offered for Samuel, I would honestly take the deal. I mean, how many guys can you get? How many guys can you get for that kind of money? It's crazy. I wouldn't pay A.J. Brown that money. And I love A.J. Brown. DK Metcalf, I'm not paying him that. Like, to me, those guys are all second-round picks, by the way. Like, that's easy to replicate. I wouldn't do it. I think there's an argument to be made that you can. But, man, and the argument is there for guys like Adams and Hill and Samuel and guys like that. But these like next tier guys, there's no way in hell I'm paying them that.
Right.
And
well,
some team will.
Well, look at what happened with Christian Kirk. I mean, that's a drop down, and he's getting 38 guaranteed. And he's resetting the whole damn market. Thank you, Jacksonville. Hey, let's hear what I talked to the GOAT yesterday, or one of the GOATs, however you want to have your GOAT conversation. Jerry Rice, damn it. This was him on Debo, by the way, of whether or not the 49ers should keep him. Jerry doesn't have a great feel what's going to happen, and just speaking to the GOAT's work ethic. Listen.
The hat, by the way, is fantastic.
Right?
For people who couldn't see it, his hat says GOAT.
And he's normally not that guy either. Like, I've talked to him a couple times now, and he just pops up this time. I think they were telling him, hey, can we wear the GOAT hat? Yes, sure, I'll wear the GOAT hat. We'll have the full interview will be up on Stack in the Box, I think, tomorrow. So then here's Jay Ward. I might pay Debo 25. I'm not going to pay him 30. Like, you know, that's right. That's the conversation. Well, what's the line? And how do you?
Some point there is one, but you're right. It's a hard one to find. And I think, look, again, I would not criticize the Niners if they paid him that money. He's a great player, and he's earned that money. Like he's earned a lot of money. He's earned $30 million a year. I don't know that any receivers earn $30 million a year, but he's earned whatever he can get. And that's credit to him. But I do think, like, look, when the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, because I know we got a lot of Chiefs fans in here, so I'll use them as the example instead of Adams and the Packers. When the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, I thought they were insane. But then you saw the contract that that Hill got with Miami. And I talked to some people close to the situation. You understand, look, the thought process is essentially it's five draft picks, including two in the top 50, and it's essentially $75 million in cap space. Now, the rub of that is you have to make that work. You have to make it work. Like, the Chiefs have all these assets they got from this Tyreek Hill trade. They got those five picks and the cap, okay? That means jack if you get bad players with those assets. So really, I know people always like to assign the winners and losers of this stuff. But ultimately, I think it matters, or the answer lies in who you end up getting.
Of course.
That's what you need. And and that's an obvious answer, but people love to do this whole like, well, you can't base it off results. It's off process. Bullshit. This is the National Football League. Everything is based off results. Everything. Now, you can have a really good year of results and have a crappy process, and that's not going to hold up over the course of time. And that's fine, right? We can all agree on that. But in the NFL, okay, if the Chiefs make this trade twice, right, in two different parallel universes, and in one universe they draft a Hall of Famer in the first round this year, and they get two other guys who can really contribute, and they sign three really good free agents, and they win two Super Bowls in the next 3 years, then yeah, that's a pretty damn good trade. On the flip side, if they draft five guys who can't play and sign two guys who are a bust, and they don't go to the Super Bowl for the next decade, and Tyreek Hill's putting up 1,400-yard years with Tua in Miami, then yeah, it's a horrible trade. So, look, that all said, to put a bow on this, with Debo, just as an example, because I think he's the best of the bunch, if you're the Niners, I will put it this way. If you can get a huge haul for him and you don't want to pay him the $30 million, I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem with if they were to somehow lose the guy in like free agency. Like if a team bungled that, right? Like if somehow they like negotiated, and then all of a sudden, for whatever the reason, they lost him, whether it was a year after the tag. Like, quite honestly, now he's not the same level player, but like how the Bears lost Allen Robinson. Sure. Like, to me, that's insane. Either pay the guy or trade him, but you can't lose him and go, well, we got a comp pick. Who cares? I mean, right. You better, right. That you can't do. That right. You cannot do.
Right, right. Well, and listen, everything the Bears do, you basically can't do.
That's also fair.
They've got the least amount of picks. Well, they've got third least this month, this year, and over the last 5 years, they've had the least amount in the NFL. And what have they gotten for it? Nothing. You know, you're sitting here with a barren roster. So that's a shout out to good luck to Ryan Poles, because you can't do worse than what Ryan Pace did. All right, here let's move along here. But by the way, like to your point, look, Davante Adams was picked 53. The Chiefs have 2 second round picks. One of them's number 50. You find the next Devontae at 50, great train. You know, I mean,
right, of course, it's, right. I mean, that is ultimately, and yes, we're going to move on here, but that is truly, everybody gets so into the whole, well, you know, the war of this trade and all the process, that's all nonsense in the NFL. You think these guys are sitting there and trying to figure out like what the war of the trade is? They're just trying to get into the best situation they can. I remember when I wrote last year. And this caused like a legitimate stir on Twitter, which I was proud of. I wrote a piece detailing the Chiefs' entire offseason and every move that they made and how they came about it. And I talked to a lot of people around that situation for the story. And
China hack?
No. This time, just my dad just making fun of the Yankees. And so, long story short, Orlando Brown. The trade from Baltimore to Kansas City. that trade, when the Ravens and Chiefs were trying to figure out what the value of the player and the picks were and how they're going to make it all work, and there were, if you remember, there were a lot of picks involved to try to smooth everything out. Those two teams used an online draft calculator. Right. That's how they figured it out. Okay. Now, these aren't two bum franchises. One's been to multiple Super Bowls in the last 3 years and won one of them. The Ravens are a model of consistency. And those two teams sat down with an online draft calculator to figure out that trade. And then you have people who like galaxy brain these things. Like, well, I have this model that shows, look, you think these guys have time to sit there and they're all going to agree on the same model? That's not how this works. They sit down, they hammer out a business deal. That's what it is. And whether or not it worked out, like that trade year one, the Chiefs won that trade. The Chiefs won that trade. Brown was terrific. He was a Pro Bowler. He solved a ton of their issues. And the Ravens couldn't block for Lamar Jackson. I mean, now Owe, who they drafted in that round, ends up being a good pick. By the way, that second round pick the Chiefs had, Creed Humphrey. The Chiefs won that trade.
Sure. Now,
that's the way it goes. If the Chiefs draft two guys who stink, or the Chiefs draft guys who stink and Brown doesn't play well, they lose the trade. Welcome to the NFL.
Right. Well, it's all about process here. Like, you're going to get some right, you're going to get some wrong, but how you go about it and how you analyze your own guys and what's actually happening out there. Yeah. If the Niners look like, hey man, you trust me, Debo's value to this team in the huddle, on the field, making plays in the locker room, he's worth it. Well, then, you know, then you do it. If you think that you're putting him in a great position to win and other people could step into that void, well, and you're going to get X amount of picks. Okay. So that's why you get paid the big money. All right. Let's move on to my favorite player in the draft, Verteram. Yeah. So we're debating where will Kayvon Thibodeau go. Most people, I think, are assuming it's going to be in the top five and most likely with the Jets, who apparently he's had some great meetings with. But this guy is just incredibly entertaining both on and off the field. He's like my favorite. He's my favorite guy in the whole damn draft. I mean, it's insane what's coming out of his mouth, but I really enjoy it. This dude said, they asked him a question. What's the most ridiculous thing you've heard coming up around the draft that's been asked to you? And his response was, the most ridiculous thing I've heard is that I'm not the best player in this draft. I really don't listen to anything else, but that to me, that's outrageous. All right, baby. Put yourself on the playing field. I mean, come on. Anybody who says I'm not the best player here, that's just insanity. Gotta love the confidence here, Verteram. He's crazy, but he's beautiful.
I talked to him at the combine. Yeah. I love talking to him. I mean, it was just at a press conference. It wasn't one-on-one or anything, you know, but he was really interesting. I thought he was really smart, really insightful. Does the guy have an ego? Yeah, guys, everybody in this league has an ego. Every single – you think there are guys in the NFL that don't – you don't think Patrick Mahomes has an ego – the size of Texas? Of course he does. Of course he does. You have to at that level. Now, some guys hide it better than others. Okay? Some guys are more mature about it than others. But I will say this for Kayvon Thibodeau. You haven't heard anything about the guy off the field, like there's any issue off the field that I'm aware of.
No, but the people he gets jumped on that – he went to Oregon because he wanted to be close to Nike and he was thinking about his businesses and he's making a ton of money in NIL. And people are like, ooh, he's got other interests, you know, other than football.
You know what kills me with that crap? You probably know what I'm going to say. Do you think guys in friggin' Alabama aren't getting paid like before the NIL deals? I mean, the only thing that's changed with the NIL deals, let me rephrase it, not the only. One of the main things that changed with those deals is you now just have the money out front and everybody sees it. I mean, you don't think these guys are getting paid before NIL deals? Like all of a sudden now these kids are getting money. I mean, now it's just legitimized, so to speak. But these guys are getting paid. And as far as Thibodeau goes, if you turn on the tape and watch him,
he's insane.
The guy can play, man. Now listen. There are legitimate – there's been a lot of chatter in leagues. And I've had people tell me – I've even – me personally had a couple people tell me they worry about his motor. Okay, fine. And I'll hear that. But the bottom line is like to me, I do worry about a guy who the motor thing is an issue. But I got when I've only watched a handful of games. I'm not a draft evaluator, but when I've watched him, because I've been curious to see about this whole effort thing, I don't see a huge issue. I don't. I mean, that kid is screaming off the edge. I would take Aiden Hutchinson. I would if you gave me the choice of the two, I just think Hutchinson's a slightly better player. Okay. And in full disclosure, I spent 2 days with the kid, and I think the world of him, and I got to really get to know his father, Chris, very well. I think his father's top notch, but I think Aiden's a slightly better player, even just taking all that away, just on the field. But Kayvon Thibodeau, like if I'm sitting there in the top five and I need an edge rusher and Hutchinson's off the board, I'm taking Kayvon Thibodeau. So that kid is electric.
So I think I actually agree with, and I'm not anywhere close to a draft expert, but what I've watched, I'm like, I doubt there's a better player in the draft than this dude. He's the quintessential explosive guy coming off the edge. How many of those guys are out there? Not many in the history of the NFL. I don't know who he reminds you of, but there's, and I'm not saying he's going to be Lawrence Damn Taylor.
I mean, from just his athletic profile, I'm not, and I don't think he's going to be as good as his player. Excuse me, a little bit of a cough. Von Miller.
Sure. Khalil Mack. Something I mean, like that.
It doesn't mean that I think he's going to end up being a first ballot Hall of Famer like Von Miller is. Okay, if I thought that, I'd say he'd take him first overall. But in terms of just the way he plays, his athleticism, his bend, his explosiveness, I could see a little bit of Miller. But keep in mind, every year, these top 10 guys, half these guys are going to end up being washouts. They just are. It's the way the league works.
Well, the concern is that he's a little bit undersized and that he's not going to be able to get to the quarterback as easily in the NFL as he did in college, which of course is true, and that he won't be able to, despite his enormous skill set, he's not going to be creative enough to overcome the additional size he's going to be facing every Sunday. I don't know, man. The dude's 6'4", 254. He runs a 4.6, and his get off is off the charts. But forget about all that. The dude's had 19 sacks in 32 college games. I mean, he's just, I don't know. And then
on the flip side, I know we got Ben Heisler here. We're going to welcome him in a second. On the flip side, you hear a lot of talk now that Georgia's Trayvon Walker is going to go number one overall. Trayvon Walker, from a statistical standpoint, did nothing in college. Nothing. And yet these people are like, well, you got to take him because he's got traits. I mean, that is to me. And I'm not saying this about Trayvon Walker. Maybe he turns out to be a great player. That is insanity to me. Hey, look, he's never done anything at the college level that's worth talking about. But let's make sure we take him and put – because right now – okay, so he's – according to his College Sports Reference page, I don't have his draft profile page up, so I'm sure this is off by a couple pounds. He's 6'5", 275, okay? He played 3 years at Georgia. He had 9.5 sacks. It's 6 last year, 3.5 the years before that. Okay. I mean, I love that he's got explosiveness and he's got all these tools and okay, fine. He hasn't been productive on any not anywhere near anyway. The way that other guys have been at the top tier level, you know, Hutchinson and Thibodeau and Jermaine Johnson. Like it's amazing to me how many people are just like, it doesn't matter that he wasn't able to get guys on the ground. Now, again, I got no problem taking the kid in the first round. But I'm a big believer in like, okay, but did you actually produce? I mean, 6'5", 272, okay, according to his actual adjustment. And listen, he's a freak of an athlete. We're in a 4.51.
Anything?
Okay. Here's
how to know.
The little ad there. Sorry, I apologize. We're in a 4.51 40-yard dash. So, I mean, his talent, his athletic profile is off the chart. But you're taking him over Hutchinson and Thibodeau? There's no way in hell I'm doing that. Based off of what? What you think he might be, which I get is part of the draft process. Right. Of course, he's a kid, right? You're projecting a little bit. But to me, like, that's just nuts. It's like when teams take some receiver who had, like, 600 yards in college as, like, his top line number. They're like, well, I think in the NFL, he's going to be a 1,200-yard guy. Why? What makes you think that? I'm blown away by some of these people.
Trying to be the smartest guy in the room is one of the dangerous things you can do. And it's also, hey, I mean, I don't know. Were the Chiefs the smartest in the room when they drafted Patrick Mahomes? Probably they were. You know, you drafted Mahomes ahead of Watson. Forget about the whole Mitchell Trubisky thing, even though I just brought it up again for the zillionth time. But that was a bold move. So it worked out. But in general, you make sure as sure of a bet as you can make, because it's
early. You get in the third, fourth round. There's a guy with massive upside. Hey, I hear that. I get that.
Yeah.
But you're in the top five. Okay, first of all, there's a reason you're in the top five. Second of all, go get a guy. And by the way, I think Trayvon Walker is going to be a very good NFL player. I do. I genuinely do. But I think to draft him ahead of Hutchinson or Thibodeau, that I just don't get. I don't get. Maybe time proves me wrong. Maybe he turns out to be a Hall of Famer. Good on him. I would take the kids that are proven. Now, if you want to take him as a third pass rusher, cool. But the first two guys, there's no way I'd pass him.
Lucas, great stuff today. Let's bring in our guy, Ben Heisler, managing editor, bet-sided, ready to rock and roll. Looking very athletic today, Heis, with his amazing television, which got us some good buzz last week.
I still contend, Carm, that, and I had a conversation with my old man over the weekend when I was back home, because he's still, and he's very technology obsessed. He still has a plasma screen sitting in his den from, I think, the same year. It's Panasonic from 2008. So you got two examples, 14-year career, still performing at a very high level. So I continue to work. It hasn't stopped yet. It's gonna stay in the house until it breaks.
Verim, I know you did, I'm sure you watched back last week's show, but in case you didn't, we just asked Ben how many moves that TV has made it through. And the answer was what?
Answer was eight.
Eight moves, Bertram.
Wow. Eight moves. Good for you.
Yeah.
When I moved into this house, God, it would have been September 2018. So we moved in. I told my wife, I don't care what you do with the whole rest of the house. I don't care what you do. You paint it pink flowers for all I care. I want one room in the basement. I really want the whole basement, but we negotiated down to one room in the basement. And I got my office. Okay, and I wanted to just be whatever I wanted to be, but the deal was, I had to build it out with my father-in-law because it was just studs. So when it was finished, and look, I'm going to Best Buy, I'm getting the biggest television that I can fit in here without being a complete tool, and that's what I did, and I love it. I will have that TV as long as it'll last. I got the sound bar, the whole. I went all in, only because I am worried about furnishing one room in this household. The rest of it is completely up.
I mean, you're just a beautiful man. Let me have my basement where I can do everything that my 4-year-old self wants, and I'll be an adult once I leave here. All right,
the TV. I got NBA Jam and Space Invaders behind me. We're good. the rest of this house, I don't care. You can be the adult, do whatever you want to do. That's fine. Okay, I don't take whatever. Take full liberty.
How often, because I've been asking myself this question, because occasionally I'll see the NBA Jam arcade game. I mean, it's either that or NFL Blitz for me is the addition that I want to add on. How often do you play it? How often do you say, all right, I need like a 10, 15-minute mental break, play a little NBA Jam? Because I feel like that would be the motivating factor for me to have it downstairs.
I got to admit, I hate to admit, I don't play nearly as much as I should.
Okay.
Because I always end up like, you know, either Maisie and I are hanging out or I'm working or something's going on. But if I crank it up, I play it for like 4 hours. Because it also connects to Wi-Fi. Like it connects to like a countrywide server. So you can play people all over the country. So now Space Invaders earlier model can't do that. Obviously, it's also just a one-player deal. NBA Jam, it connects, and it also it's like three different NBA Jams. It's NBA Jam, NBA Jam Tournament Edition, NBA Hang Time. It's like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's got all three of the games in it. The best thing that happened was when I bought it. Our company's founder Zach Best was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And then a week later, sent me a picture, and he bought it for his house. So I had to have it. But I play it. Probably a couple times a month. I'd love to play more, but if I play, I get so into it that then I'm in it for the long haul.
If you rewind the tape, there was a moment there where Ben's face turned into like, okay, I'm getting it. There was like, oh, no. There's tournament style. Yes, you did. But okay, maybe you won't. Maybe you're not all the way there. But I saw.
Like getting it is in like, this is going to be an addition, not like, all right, Verderam, I get it. No, it was very much the first one where now I'm very intrigued. Because I played all three of those different ones. They have them at the different arcade bars. Which I haven't been to in probably a couple of years now because of the pandemic and everything like that, but I'll have to get back. Yeah, this is going to be a circled item for your guy.
The next one is going to have to be Topgolf, right?
That's is a major time suckage.
It's called Figolf.
I got room for a third one.
It's called Figolf, and I still haven't set it up in the basement yet, but it's like – it has the weight of a club, but it's only like yay big. And that's, please don't screenshot that because that's going to be a whole other, you know, fun conversation for another time. But you can set it up to that TV and you can have like a $200 golf simulator in your house with like a weighted club. I got that for, you know, maybe a couple of years ago as a birthday present. And that's another thing that should just be living on that screen. And, you know, every hour or so, I just go and take five swings and get back to work. I feel like I'd be actually much more productive if this was set up right behind me today.
There you go.
Space Invaders, yes. Me and we have an arcade right next to the office here at in good old – I don't live Verderam's money. I'm not buying – or Heisler's money, apparently, of buying these machines. I just go next door to the barcade.
Relatively speaking, they're not that expensive. Like, I'm not saying that – like it's just like throwaway money. It certainly isn't. But like it's not as
How much?
I think it was $400.
$400 for yeah. NBA Jam. That's a steal.
$400 for NBA Jam,
right? Like I thought it was way more than that. Like, I forget where I saw it. It was like some advertisement. I was like, oh gosh, things make a grand. It's like $400.
Golf Simulator was $200. Card. Like this is the day's work. I understand. Day's work for you.
Right.
$400. It's a lot, but I'm just saying, like, you would think it'd be a lot more than
no. Good investment.
$400.
Good investment.
An hour to assemble it. Boom.
On next week's show, I'm gonna have it set up for you guys, and we can go over. You guys can evaluate the one Benny High swing.
All right. Looking forward to it. All right. Let's do business here. Yeah. Ben, we got three things for you today. Number one. Which guys are the best bets to go early? First quarterback taken. What are we looking at here? Let's make some dough.
Yeah, I know that the consensus was on Malik Willis for a long time. Impressed everybody during the NFL Combine. There was a ton of conversation around him, but he hasn't really separated from the pack. And there continues to be more names that creep up and up on the board over at WinBet to basically take his place. He's -200, so still a substantial favorite, but. A couple names to consider. The first is Kenny Pickett, depending on whether or not you're buying into the fact that Carolina would take a swing at him. He is considered the most accurate quarterback in the draft. I also, whenever guys continue to just get pounded as far as what their negative aspects are ahead of the draft, it tends to be a bit of a smokescreen for Pickett. It was all about the hand size, which we remember. But, I mean, he's +120. There's a lot of rumored interest in Pickett, just a question of who and where. So it wouldn't shock me at all if he ends up being the guy. And I think the other really interesting name to consider is Desmond Ridder over at Cincinnati. It's still a long shot, but he's at 9-1 right now over at WinBet. So that would be the third quarterback taken off the board behind Willis and Pickett. This guy started off consensus at 30-1. So he was behind Matt Corral. He was behind Sam Howell. He was probably going to go off as the fifth quarterback, and slowly but surely you started to see more money start to come in, more sharp money coming in on Ridder. Do I think he'll be the first quarterback overall? Probably not, but considering where that movement has gone, there's some inherent value that's sitting on the board, especially if a lot of these teams that we think might go quarterback pass on a quarterback, and now you're talking about a guy that's still maybe considered an end of a first round graded option. And maybe in the late part of the first round, if none of these guys are off the board, maybe Ritter's sitting there and he provides tremendous value.
I'm right now searching for my Desmond Ridder fan-sided story, which was about him wanting to win the college football playoff for all the little schools. I love that kid. He was awesome to talk to. I don't know if he's going to be good or not, but I like him a lot, rooting for Desmond Ridder. All right. Topic two, Benny. Everyone wants to know wide receivers. Who do you got here? Are you all in on Garrett Wilson?
I really like him. I think everything about his game is really exciting. He can be a elite level possession receiver. You can play him in the inside. You can play him on the outside. I think the fit with a team like Atlanta makes all the sense in the world. And even for somebody like London, who is starting to creep up a little bit, and just by far the best 50-50 wide receiver option in the draft, a guy that's going to be able to go up. I read, I think it was Liz Loza over at Yahoo, writing about his basketball background and his ability for separation. But the fact that he hasn't run a 40 time might scare some teams away. You kind of just know what you're getting with Wilson, and that's somebody that can be as versatile as you need him to be, great speed on the outside, like just sort of a do-it-all, really solid, reliable option that if you're going to take as the number one wide receiver off the board, it's both a high upside play and also a high floor play at the same time. I just think there's no question marks with him. Maybe you'd like him to be an inch or two taller. He's, you know, measured in at about 6 feet, but I think he's by far and away the number one wide receiver on the board. And yeah, there's a couple names that are creeping up by him, but I think it's smoke at this point. I think there's still good value on him on the board at WynnBET.
4-10 if the Jets go Thibodeau and Wilson. That would be an exciting day if I was a J-E-T-S, Jets fan. It'd be a big spin, but I would be excited about it. All right, number two overall. I find number one overall to be interesting here as well, but go ahead, number two.
The only reason I went with number two is I feel like you have a better value opportunity. I would be surprised if it's anybody other than Aiden Hutchinson going number one to Jacksonville. But my old colleague, Frankie Tadeo over at Sports Illustrated, has reported that there is a lot of sharp money coming in on Trayvon Walker to be the number one overall pick. Again, there's still a lot of movement there. And at number one right now at WynnBET, you have Hutchinson at minus 320. So there's no good value there outside of that. But at number two, let's say Hutchinson does go off the board. You can get Walker, who is probably that likely number two overall pick, at 2-1 odds. And then if for whatever reason Walker goes number one to Jacksonville, there's no chance that Detroit's staying away from Hutchinson, and you can get him at plus 225. So rather than try to guess the number one pick, I think you have as good of a chance as any to get positive value on either the top two edge rushers in this draft, in both Hutchinson and Walker. Well, Walker, I don't know if he's necessarily qualifies as an edge rusher, more of a sort of a defensive end that eventually can work into becoming a very good pass rusher. But those two are the pretty much the consensus top two picks in this draft, and both are available over at WynnBET in that number two spot at plus money. So even if you're strongly believing that it's going to be Hutchinson number one, you can get Walker at 2-1. You can get Hutchinson at plus 225 to hedge that bet a little bit and get plus value wherever you go.
Did everybody pay attention there? Because Heist just made you some dough. Not a little huge dough, but a nice little play, right?
You made yourself enough dough to go out and get NBA champ.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Anything else popping draft-wise, Ben, that you want to mention, or are we good?
I think that's what I've seen right now that's been the most intriguing option. There are some reports, and not necessarily reports, but more sort of movement on which NFL teams are most likely to select these top quarterbacks on the board. Right now, the Panthers are the favorite at WynnBET to draft Malik Willis at plus 250. The Falcons are behind at plus 350. I still like the Steelers in that conversation as well. I think that's not necessarily where a smoke there's fire type of conversation. I think there's genuine interest there. And I think because of the fact that Pickett played at Pittsburgh, you're getting a more of a narrative that they might have more interest in him. But I actually think Willis is a more intriguing option in that spot. Pickett also plus 250 to go to the Panthers. He's plus 300 at the Steelers. And then if you're considering the Saints in the mix, they're 3-1 as well. I get it. Pickett has the accuracy that you want in this draft. They just had all those years with a very accurate quarterback in Drew Brees. Considering the options that they currently have, accuracy has been an issue in running their offense. So I suppose New Orleans and Pickett is in play. But I think if I had to choose one of those, of all the different teams to draft either Willis or Pickett, I like Pittsburgh at plus 350 on Willis. I think that's a good option, especially with a bridge quarterback in Trubisky that they have for the next couple of years.
Real quick before you go, Lucas is writing his favorite line is Kyle Hamilton being drafted after 10.5. I'd love the line if it was 9.5, but I don't think Hamilton goes top 10, even though I love him as a prospect. You got any thoughts on that there, Benny?
I mean, Hamilton is somebody that could go either in the middle of the you know, the top 5 to 10, or maybe slide a little bit, just depending on what you feel the needs are. He's obviously a highly graded prospect, and somebody that I feel is going to be a very high floor guy. Highest, according to NFL.com, he's the highest graded player in the draft, 6.81, with Hutchinson just a tad below him at 6.8. I think the bigger question, and maybe this is more for you, Verderam, is how much emphasis are teams still putting on the safety position that early in the draft? We've seen some guys go in years past, but you tend to see them drop a little bit because the emphasis is still on edge rusher, still on quarterback, still on wide receiver, and really sort of ensuring those positions. I just don't know how much level you have for a very good safety, even somebody with the pedigree of Hamilton right now.
It's very rare you see a safety go in the top 10 picks. It's just very rare. And Luke actually points it out. Minka Fitzpatrick, Derwin James fell. I mean, in my lifetime, how many guys – well, I don't want to say my lifetime.
Eric Berry, baby.
Right. Eric Berry is the rare guy who – I don't know that I ever can remember.
Jamal Adams, too, was the top 10 pick.
Yep. I mean, but you're talking very few, right? Earl Thomas was in the first, but he wasn't a top 10 pick. As Lucas pointed out, Fitzpatrick and Derwin James fell out of the top 10. Most of those guys don't – you know, Chancellor was a second-round pick. Most safeties, even top safeties, they fall. If you said to me, bet your mortgage, top 10, I'd say, no, I don't think he's a top 10 pick. I think he should be, talent-wise. I think he absolutely should be. But I don't think he will be, because I think what you're going to see is a lot of edge rushers, top 10. You're going to see a couple tackles in Neal and Aquanu. Maybe even Penning or Cross gets in there. You're going to probably see a quarterback. I never even rule out seeing two quarterbacks, because all it takes is some team being desperate enough to trade up there and go after them. So
two.
I'm
in on two.
You could see it, right? I mean, you could absolutely see two quarterbacks going. You could see the Panthers taking one, and I'm keeping my eye on the Saints. There is no way that team made that move with the Eagles, which I still don't understand, unless they want a quarterback. Well, you got to get those picks. And if you look at those picks, what does it equate to? If they package those picks on the Jimmy Johnson value terms, I know some teams still use, some don't. If you package those picks, where does it get them? Gets them to 5, right ahead of Carolina. I don't think that was an accident.
Panthers, Giants, Falcons, Seahawks, y'all need a quarterback. Every single damn one of you. I'll take two of you taking a spin at it.
If there's a spot that Hamilton could possibly go in the top 10, would we all agree that Seattle would probably be that spot?
Yeah. Because of the way they value the position.
Yes. That's my thought process too. But I do like the over 10.5. I just think Seattle could muck things up a little bit there.
Also, does Seattle take him after paying Quandre Diggs? I mean, they just invested quite a bit.
To me, it's an obvious over, but
I would take the over, personally.
I would, too.
All right. Hey, Ben, great stuff. When's the next Bet-Sided show?
Bet-Sided, actually, bit quick announcement. So we'll have Bet and Breakfast going live. We're back on the weekends, 11 a.m. Eastern time, Saturday and Sunday. And then I can actually announce this here. The Daily Bet Slip is going to be a live everyday show Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern right here on YouTube. So if you're a Stack in the Box subscriber, make sure you guys head it over. Check out the Bet-Sided channel over on YouTube. It's going to be a daily show. We'll have guests. We'll have our favorite bets of the day, bad beats, whatever is sort of on the world of betting and conversation heading into that slate of games that night. We will have you covered, and it'll be a lot of fun. So the Daily Bet Slip starting on Monday, 5 o'clock Eastern. Get a little happy hour going with us over on the Bet-Sided team.
All right. Love it. Hey, fansided.com/betsided for the written content. Subscribe to that YouTube channel. Ben, we'll see you next week, brother.
All right, gents. Talk to you soon.
Ben Heisler, ladies and gentlemen, managing editor, Bet-Sided. Verderam, we got a quick wrap up to the show here.
Yep.
Let's just run through this. Packers or Chiefs, better job replacing their wide receiver? To me, that's obvious. It's going to be the Chiefs. You've got 12 picks in the damn draft. Take some swings. Let's go. I would bet on Kansas City all day.
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams can do it. The Packers, the reason I put it on there is the Packers' two first-round picks are both ahead of the Chiefs' two first-round picks.
Right.
However, I think the Chiefs enter the draft in a better spot because they signed Juju, they signed MVS. Now, listen, I'm not saying either one of those guys are great, although I actually think Smith-Schuster is going to have a really good year for them. Like, I could see that being the classic, like he goes and has 1,200 yards and then goes and gets, like, $15 million a year somewhere else. Okay, but they're in a better spot. I also, though, will say I kind of feel and Veach has not had to draft a lot of receivers since he's been there. I mean, it has not been a big thing for them. They've drafted Hardman. They drafted Cornell Powell late last year who didn't do anything. I feel like the Chiefs have a pretty good handle on what they have to do to put a good group around Mahomes. I also feel the same is true of Gutekunst with the Packers. The short answer is I think both teams will do a nice job, but I do think the Chiefs are in a slightly better position because of how they enter the draft. And also, as you mentioned, Carmi had to nail that. They have 12 picks. So I think they can maneuver the board a little bit more than the Packers can.
Will they trade any one of their 4 7th round picks?
Can you move four?
What is the 4 7th rounders worth? Can you get one in the fifth for that?
That's actually a funny question. An interesting one. I don't, you know what? I should know that off the top of my head because I always look at those draft value charts. Let's pull it up for fun and see.
Because the Bears have 2 picks in the fifth round. I'm wondering, does this make sense? Because the Bears need swings.
I'm going off of draft techs value charts. I'm not sure. I'm doing this so quick. I'm not sure if this is the exact like thing that you'd see for Jimmy Johnson or not. It might be. If it's not, I'm sure it's really close. All right, so the Chiefs have in the draft, they have 2 picks in each of the first 4 rounds, and then they have 4 in the 7th. That could get them a late 6th round pick. So I think what you'll probably see is they'll package a couple of those picks, attach it to like another pick. I
would just take swings. I take big swings.
Well, I was going to say, that's the other angle, right? Like, if you're then, you just say, look, we got 4 of these picks. Like, now, the Chiefs have never been a franchise that shies away from guys with red flags. So, would they be the team that's like, hey, this guy's got a big medical issue, we don't care? I mean, they drafted Trey Smith in the 6th round last year when – a lot of teams had him off the board. I mean, I did a lot of reporting on this. He was off a lot of teams' boards, and the Chiefs themselves had a very, very long, lengthy discussion on that day, on day 3 of that draft, about should we feel comfortable taking him because with COVID they couldn't do the medicals they normally do. I mean, they took him. They felt confident. He was a Pro Bowl level guard as a rookie. He was awesome. So would the Chiefs take 4 swings on guys like that and just go, you know what? Screw it. Who cares? If we miss on all 4 of them, so what? What does it matter? Yeah, I think if they have those picks, knowing the way Brett Veach operates, that's exactly what they'll do. They'll take 4 huge cuts and hope they hit 1 or 2 of them.
Yep. Hey, in the history of franchises that I would trust taking swings, KC, you're probably at the top of the list. All right, let's wrap up with one more here, Verderam.
Yep.
Let's do the Raiders. Do we think the Raiders are a playoff team? Here you go, Derek Carr. We got you a Davante Adams. Take us to the playoffs, baby, in an incredibly competitive division. We believe in you. Yes or no?
I'll let you lead off on this one. Do you think they're one of the top 7 teams in the AFC?
I find it to be super interesting with the value of receivers and all the entire conversation that we had today. Who made who? Devontae versus Aaron? Or was it equal? To me, you were playing with Aaron, man. And ain't going to look the same. And I like Derek Carr. I am a Derek Carr fan.
Me too. Me too.
So, but we're talking about Aaron. We're talking about GOAT levels. So top 7, is the whole AFC West going to make the damn playoffs? I think we did this exercise once before. I listen, if I had to bet on it, I'll say they squeak in. Give me a squeak in.
Here, listen, I think they're absolutely contending to make the playoffs. And any Raider fan's going to just go, oh, it's because you're a Chiefs fan. Listen, I don't think they're a playoff team, and I'll tell you why. I think the Bills are clearly better. I think the Ravens are better, which I know Raiders fans might really push back on, but I think the Ravens are better. The Bengals are better.
Yep.
The Chiefs are better even with losing Tyreek Hill. They're still a better team because no, and I'm with you. I love Derek Carr, but he's not Mahomes. Let's just be real. Mahomes gives them such an advantage off the jump. I like the Chargers better.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like Denver better. I think.
I'm not sure about that one.
I'm not either. I'm as you can tell. Here's how I'd work this. Okay. I think that Cincinnati, Kansas City, LA, and Buffalo are all clearly better. That's my 14. Now, with the one caveat of that being, the Chargers, can they ever win anything? That team has been a wreck for years. Every year of my life, it feels like they're like, oh, 13 wins, and they go 8-8. But I love Herbert, and I like the moves they made this offseason. So I'm going to ride with what I believe. Those four teams are better. Then you get into somebody's got to win the AFC South, whether it's Tennessee or Indianapolis. Do you think both of them are better? I like the Raiders comparatively to those two teams. I might take Indy over them by a smidge. I don't know. But you're basically asking me, and I like Baltimore. I'm a Baltimore guy. So for me, I like one of the teams in the South. I'll take Indy, okay? Baltimore, Cincinnati, that's three. Buffalo, that's four. Chiefs, Chargers, that's six. So for me, it's the Raiders against Cleveland, tough. Miami, who I like tough. The Raiders. I like the Raiders more than both those teams. Are they better than Denver and Tennessee? I don't think Oakland. I don't think Vegas beats all those teams out. So I'll say no. I think they have a shot. And Hefe's asking me real quick, who do I think takes first in the West? I'm taking the Chiefs until they lose the division. Because to me, the one huge advantage the Chiefs have, best coach, best quarterback. And that's inarguable. So, like, and quietly and very importantly, they have the best offensive line by a mile in that division. So, and I think defensively they'll get better in the draft. The draft is, look, nobody else has picks in that division. The Chargers don't have their second and their sixth. The Raiders don't have their first couple of first and second. The Broncos have a second, but they're without their first and without the other second they were going to have. The Chiefs have a million picks. I will take the Chiefs in that division. I still think the Chiefs are the second best team in that conference, but the gap is now shrunk significantly, largely because of what other teams have done.
Let's wrap it right there, brother. 1 hour of Stack in the Box. Hey, if you could just, for all our diehards out there, if you could just pass this show along to one good friend and tell them, you know, you should really be subscribing to Stack in the Box.
That's right.
We would really appreciate that as we continue to try to grow the channel.
Almost to 500.
Almost to 500 subscribers, baby. One subscriber at a time. So
we screwed this up. We should have talked about this at the very beginning. We could, of course, do it next week. The draft on Thursday night. We are going to be live on this channel the entire first round. Carm, myself, guests will be coming in and out. If you want to watch draft coverage, I honestly will tell you, mute the television, turn on ESPN, turn on NFL Network, whatever you want, mute it. We'll be here. It's going to be Carm, myself. It's going to be streamed not only on Stack in the Box, it'll be on Carm's The Windy City podcast, streaming live there.
Wow.
It will also be streaming live on the Arrowhead Attic stream. So we are going to blow out the coverage. We will be here. And I really hope that everybody joins us. And if you're listening and you've not ever subscribed on YouTube, it's going to be a live show. So it's not going to be recorded audio-wise. Go to YouTube, check out Stack in the Box, hit the subscribe button. We will be here for literally what's probably going to be 4 to 5 hours. So we're going to be here all night long, Thursday, April 28th.
And for the record, it will be a party. There will be alcohol is invited for this affair.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, and maybe we can even bring some people on.
We are going to be bringing people on.
Well, no, not. I'm talking about bringing the Gonzos, the J Wards, the Hefes, like, you know, something like, let's get some people in here. Let's have some fun here. But yeah, NFL draft, night one. Where else would you rather be? So, all right. Appreciate everybody. Ferdinand, great to be back with you, buddy.
You too, Carm. Happy to be back.
Yep. We will see you all next week for the regular show, 11 o'clock Central time next Tuesday, and then the draft next Thursday night. Thanks to Ben. Thanks to everybody for weighing in here. Appreciate everybody's help today, and we will see you next week.